debt. It keeps you tossing and turning at night. You can't get away from it. But the truth is, the system is designed to trap you in debt. Insanely high interest credit cards and loans make it nearly impossible to pay off your debt. There's a new way out of the debt trap, Pivotal Debt Solutions. Pivotal Debt Solutions isn't like the old school debt relief companies that string your debt out for years. They have aggressive strategies that can end your debt faster and easier than you thought possible. Pivotal Debt Solutions can cut or even eliminate interest. Find programs to write off your balances so you owe less. Stop those threatening phone calls, and without bankruptcy and without a loan. Bottom line, they find every solution possible to end your debt permanently. Before you do anything, contact Pivotal Debt Solutions first. Talk to them for free. Find out how fast they can help you get out of debt. Visit zapmydebt.com. That's zapmydebt.com. Zapmydebt.com.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. The Senate hearings, Donald Trump's nomination of Amy Coney Barrett to be the ninth justice of the Supreme Court, replacing Ruth Bader Ginsburg. In about 40 minutes, 45 minutes from now, we will be back to the hearings. You know, with an occasional commentary or interruption, but I thought one of the most interesting things from this morning's questioning of Judge Barrett, and more than interested in hearing your thoughts on this as well. We can just open this up and have a conversation about it, particularly if you caught something I missed. I mean, I was doing show prep this morning. The 3 hours before I go on the air are pretty busy. You know, it's entirely possible that I missed something altogether, something that happened. And so, you know, if you think there was anything that you spotted, feel free to give us a shout. And Joe Biden has now come out and said, I'm not a big fan of court packing, was his phrase, but he refused to rule it out. But he said, I'd really rather talk about real issues. This is not a real issue right now. The Republican Party is trying to make it a real issue. I mean, this is kind of the new but her emails kind of story, but there's that. But the one thing that really struck me was, and I believe it was under questioning from Dianne Feinstein, Judge Barrett was asked about the status of laws that protect LGBTQ people, gay rights laws, gay marriage laws, things like that. She said, words to the effect, I don't have the exact quote right in front of me here. You know, I'm guessing we'll be getting transcripts in the next probably half hour or so in the main media. But what I heard her say, or what I thought I heard her say, was that she would not discriminate against a person based on their sexual preference. That rather caught my attention, because sexual preference is a phrase that people who argue that gay people can be converted use. Right? This is Michelle Bachmann's husband's business, you'll recall, was using Christianity and religion and some weird voodoo psychotherapy to help gay people, specifically gay men. I mean, this was his business. And you can draw your own inferences from who he was and what he was all about, but converting gay men back to being straight. Because, after all, it's a preference. A preference implies, shouts, choice, right? A person chooses to be gay or not to be gay. And, you know, all the science basically denies that. That by the time kids are 5, 6, 7, 8 years old, somewhere in that window, they have largely figured out you know, who they are and where they fit and all this. So, you know, that's not an always. Obviously, human beings, there's a huge variety of us. But this whole preference thing, rather than gender identity, which is, you know, arguably still a soft way of saying that a person has chosen this identity. But you know, it's not a dog whistle for are you choosing to be gay or not. So I'm hopeful somebody will drill down on that and just ask her, do you think that people choose to be gay? Do you think that people who have chosen to be gay in your mind can choose to become straight? I mean, we've seen a lot. You know, I've known people growing up back when homosexuality was criminal in the United States. When I was a kid, when I was in high school, when I was a young man, well, through probably half my life, gay behavior, homosexual behavior in this country, in many states, in fact, probably in most states, was criminalized. And, you know, that's one of the concerns, is not just that she's going to knock down gay marriage, but that she's going to allow the states to recriminalize consenting behavior between, you know, behavior between consenting adults. The other thing was abortion. Abortion obviously is a big issue today. And Senator Gary Peters came out yesterday, and this is just amazing. Senator Peters, by the way, Gary Peters is a really good guy. He's a senator from Michigan. He's in Michigan, he's most famous for riding a motorcycle and drinking beer. He's a Democrat. He's a progressive Democrat. In fact, he's one of the more progressive Democrats in the United States Senate. Gary Peters is a good guy. And yesterday, he revealed the story of back in the late 1980s in Detroit. He and his then-wife Heidi were pregnant with their second child. And in the fourth month of the pregnancy, and this is, you know, one of the touchstone issues, I think. In the fourth month of their pregnancy, she lost her amniotic fluid. Her water broke. Now, that's not supposed to happen until, you know, hours or days before birth. Typically, that presages birth. And the reason why is because the amniotic fluid, this water that fills the womb and surrounds the baby, protects that baby, keeps that baby, you know, safe and alive. And if that amniotic fluid goes away, particularly in the fourth month, the baby's going to die. And typically what you would do is induce an abortion at that point, because this baby is dead or is going to be dead very soon. And it's not, and every minute represents a danger, a threat to the mother, literally to the life of the mother. And Laura Bassett wrote a summary about this over on Ellie.com. She said, Heidi was 4 months along with her when her water broke. The doctor told Peters to go home and wait for a miscarriage to happen naturally, but it didn't happen naturally. They went back to the hospital the next day. The doctor detected a faint heartbeat. He recommended an abortion because the fetus still had no chance of survival. But the abortion was not an option due to hospital policy banning the procedure. I wonder if this was the same hospital where Louise gave birth to our oldest child, which was St. Mary's in Livonia, Catholic hospital. You know, they will not do abortions. So the couple went home again to wait for a miscarriage. Peter said the mental anguish one goes through is intense. They waited for several days until Heidi's health, his wife's health, was beginning to deteriorate. She was within a couple of days of dying because she now had a dead fetus inside her. The doctor said, your situation is dire. You could lose your entire uterus in a matter of hours and possibly lose your life. The doctor went to the hospital board and said, may I please do this abortion? The hospital board said no. And, you know, thankfully, Senator Peters had a friend who was on the board of another hospital and got them in quickly and saved his wife's life. But this is the kind of thing we're talking about here.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Also, we learned that now the FBI says this was a June meeting in Ohio, another right-wing fascist, racist gang, and they were planning on kidnapping Ralph Northam, the governor of Virginia. It just doesn't stop. Nicholas from Mexico. Hey, Nicholas, what's on your mind?
Wow, that was quick. Hi, I'm actually calling you from Lexington, Kentucky, for a few more days, believe it or not. I've survived almost a month here. Oh, my God. What a part of the country this is, and McConnell running roughshod over the election here. What I wanted to talk to you about
and
was
laughing
just
about it.
Not, oh, it's surreal. It's evil.
Yeah.
It's evil afoot here, I swear. Not a term I throw around.
But you got 40 seconds here, Nicholas, so what's
your point? About the gay issues in Barrett. And she was asked, she sidestepped the whole issue, I think, in my opinion. When she was asked, she said she would not discriminate against people due to their sexual preference, as you noted. What she did not say is that she would extend the right of marriage. Those are two very different things, and she sidestepped that entirely.
You're absolutely right.
And I think this
You're
is a dangerous
right.
woman. She's much smarter than I thought she was. And she sidestepped that so slyly that I just cringed when I heard that answer. And Feinstein should have followed that up with, would you extend the right to marriage? And Feinstein dropped the ball, in my opinion.
Yeah, I'm with you. There will be other opportunities, and we'll see how it plays out. Nicholas, thank you for the call. I'm waiting for somebody to say, you know, the Trump administration is federalizing local police departments. Is that constitutional? I mean, let's identify some of the things that the Trump administration is doing that many of us think are unconstitutional. I asked her about that. I'm guessing we'll get the same, no, I'm not going to answer that question,
You're
answers, but we'll
see. Tom Hartman Program.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait till you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So, what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait till you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
Anthony in St. Augustine, Florida. Hey, Anthony, what's on your mind?
The discrimination, particularly against African Americans, was not only immoral, but actually a violation of the 14th and 15th Amendments to the Constitution.
Oh, certainly. Certainly, and has been forever. I mean, this is why the Supreme Court saw fit in 1954 to overturn their own 1896 decision, the Plessy versus Ferguson separate but equal decision of 1896 was overturned with Brown v. Board, as Judge Barrett pointed out this morning in her questioning. I'm completely with you, and the 14th Amendment guarantees equal protection under the law. And the law regulates commerce, right? It's right there in the Constitution. And if discrimination is happening in commerce, I mean, it was the Commerce Clause, actually, that Lyndon Johnson used, you know, to go after people in the South after 1964. Because, you know, he was saying, well, you've got ketchup in your diner that was made in Pennsylvania by Heinz and you're selling it. So you're engaged in interstate commerce so we can regulate you. Back to you, Anthony. I'm sorry.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, because the only amendment that was really repealed was prohibition. So
we have heard repeatedly this morning, nobody's come out and said it in exactly these words, but essentially, and Anthony, thank you for the call, essentially what the Republicans have been saying, and they've been saying this for a long, long time, and Scalia and Thomas and Alito are solidly in this camp, is that because the Constitution does not say women have a right to an abortion, therefore women don't have a right to an abortion. Because the Constitution does not say everybody has a right to vote, therefore everybody doesn't have the right to vote. And what they're doing when they say that is they're completely flipping the Constitution upside down. I refer you to the Ninth Amendment. The Ninth Amendment says the enumeration of the Constitution of certain rights, right? Enumeration, listing, right? The list, numerical listing, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. The enumeration of the Constitution, in other words, the Constitution has said, you know, there are some things that, you know, government can do, there's some things government can't do, blah, 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 blah. This is the Ninth Amendment. The enumeration of the Constitution of certain rights shall not be construed to deny or disparage other rights retained by the people. Now, the Tenth Amendment goes on to say the same thing about the states. Basically, if the federal government didn't grab this power, that power belongs to the state. But the Ninth Amendment that precedes it, that is more important than it in the minds of the people who wrote the Constitution, says if just because we did not grant a right to people in the Constitution does not mean they don't have that right. Joanne in Van Nuys, California. Hey, Joanne. Thanks for listening to KPFT. What's on your mind?
I've been sitting here reviewing my law books in reference to the 14th Amendment, and that is absolutely crucial. If there's any attack upon that, that takes away equal opportunity under the law, takes away due process, takes away representation, the number of people you can have representing you, but it takes away, and it attacks Roe. It's a sly way of getting at the right to privacy, because that was the basis of Roe. In addition, it attacks citizenship, and it attacks public schools. And it denies the person the equal right to be innocent until proven otherwise. I mean, this is a very serious, and what she says, we can judge her by. What she writes is her history. And I think, I don't know whether your book on the Supreme Court, I just ordered it from Powell's in Oregon, about the U.S. Supreme Court, the history. Do you have an argument there, or do you go into, like, the 14th Amendment? Because this is a crucial, this has shaped our civil liberties.
Joanna, with apologies, you're going to find a lot of fascinating stuff in the book, including how Lincoln packed the court in 1863 and took it all the way up to 10 people just because he could, because he wanted to get a solid anti-slavery vote. And then when Andrew Jackson, after he was assassinated, Johnson became president, and they cut it down to 6, and then they took it back up to 9, and blah, 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 blah. You know, all that's in there. But the stuff about Amy Coney Barrett and the 14th Amendment deniers is not in that book. And the reason why is because I was frankly unaware of it. This is such an obscure fringe chunk of the leftover lost crusade. What's the phrase that they use? Lost cause down in the South. It's such a fringe part of the lost cause legal argument that because the Confederate states were blocked from having legislators and could not participate in ratifying a constitutional amendment during the time that the 13th, 14th, and 15th amendments were passed, they are illegitimate. That, frankly, I was unaware of it. And I was unaware of it literally right up until a few weeks ago when it was reported that on two different occasions, Amy Coney Barrett had used the word illegitimate to describe the 14th Amendment. Now, in both cases, she said, once she said possibly illegitimate, and then the other one theoretically, or you know, another qualifier. But this is the old lost cause thing, and you're right. The 14th Amendment establishes birthright citizenship, and there's a lot of conservatives who would love to blow that up. The 14th Amendment says that you know, formerly enslaved people, and that has been now interpreted to mean all people in America, have access to equal protection under the law that is equal to that of white men at that time. And, you know, and it has become the foundation of all kinds of legal precedent and laws and policies and Supreme Court decisions since then. So, you know, nobody has mentioned this yet. I keep waiting for one of the Democrats to bring it up. I think it'll be fascinating. I'm guessing that it'll be in the questioning where she'll be asked about it. Would you please give us your thoughts on the 14th Amendment? But, you know, we'll see. Renee in St. Louis. Hey, Renee, thanks for watching us on YouTube. What's on your mind?
Okay, now, Amy Coney Barrett, let me first say that I am a female. I'm black. I'm Catholic. The Catholic Church is the most racist organization on the planet. It is full of cults. We've got cults all over the place. This lady's not good for humanity. Okay, just not good for humanity. And the Republicans, they seem to never tire of wanting to take everything from people. It is so sad. So I'm really, really hoping that enough people will absolutely get out and vote. Okay, they know that they have to get Trump out. It's been proven that he's a sociopath. And what happened to those 27 psychiatrists?
They're still around. you're talking about the ones who signed the paper saying that Trump was unfit for office?
Correct. Okay, so now we've got enough documentation here that shows that this man should have got the 25th Amendment long time ago.
Oh, yeah.
Long time ago. Okay?
Yep.
And Mike Pence is what Brutus was to Caesar, or whoever it was that actually killed Caligula. Little boots. That's what we should start calling Trump. Little boots.
Yeah, there you go. I don't know. You know, Brutus, you know, put a shiv in Caesar's gut on March 15th back in the day. I forget the year now, but I remember the Ides of March. I haven't seen Pence do that yet. I see Pence constantly, you know, bowing down and licking Trump's shoes.
Uh-huh.
What am I missing?
So, I missed the fly. The fly. I was so focused on Kamala that I had to go back and watch the tapes on the fly. Pence is not good. He's just not. Okay, you cannot trust him. You cannot trust him. Mm-hmm. I don't care how nice he is. Yeah. And watch his eyes. Now, these are just basic things.
Yeah, and his.
Okay.
Yeah, and his eyes were pretty bloodshot, which makes me think that maybe he's got a mild case of COVID going on. And he's refusing to release any test results, too. So,
none of these people in the Trump administration should be there. They should not be there. Yeah. Everyone needs to go ahead and get rid of them. If they have to serve time, let them serve time. Now, I want to know why we still have to pay Trump after he gets out of office, because remember, we've got to keep him with Secret Service agents. We've got to pay for it. He still gets a paycheck from us.
That's right. He gets a pension. Yep. Okay, you know, he gets that because he's a former president. If he were impeached, he would sacrifice that, or at least a lot of that. But he wasn't successfully impeached because all of these Republicans who are in this hearing, every single one of them, voted to keep Donald Trump in office. This is who they are. And I'm just astonished that any of the Republicans who are up for re-election this cycle actually have a chance of getting reelected. I'm astonished now, that any Republican in this country, given what they've been doing, what they've been saying.
I gotta be stuck with Roy Blunt. I have to be stuck with Roy Blunt until 2022.
Oh, Renee, you have my sympathy. James in Cuba City, Wisconsin. Hey, James, what's up?
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Yeah, first-time caller, long-time listener, and I was just wondering, this is kind of a crazy idea, but why don't the House sit down, get together, and reduce the number of seats on the Supreme Court to 8 until after the election?
It would have to be passed by both the House and the Senate, and then it would have to be signed by the president. It's just not going to happen. This is what Congress did when Lincoln was assassinated. You're right, James. It's been done before. It's also what John Adams did after he lost the election to Thomas Jefferson. He and the Federalists reduced the number of people on the Supreme Court, and then Jefferson expanded it once he got in. But the fact of the matter is that when Adams did that and when Lincoln did that, their parties controlled all three of those, both the House and the Senate plus the White House. So all three parts of those two branches. So it's just not possible. I get what you're saying. I totally sympathize with it, but ain't going to happen. Let's try Carl again in Ocala. Hey, Carl, what's up?
Regarding this hearing I've been listening to, kind of amazing. Unless I missed something, the only people talking about Catholicism and faith and so on and how it might affect your decisions are the Republicans trying to make an issue, I assume.
Yes, it was not mentioned once by Democrats.
Yeah, that the Democrats are going to make a big deal out of it, and because she's Catholic, she's going to be swayed to do this and that. She probably will. I think we pretty much know her history. But my big question was this. If Trump started this whole comment about packing the court, that term is very negative, and Biden has repeatedly, over and over and over, refused to discuss, even though he did it one time in the past, mentioned his position, he refuted it. Why don't we, instead of living with what Trump talks about, why don't we rename it Balancing the Court and having four more senators put on by a legislative commission, bipartisan, made up of minority and majority leaders in both houses of the Congress? And that's...
Yeah, I wrote an op-ed this morning saying just that, Carl. Yeah, you can find it over at buzzflash.com, and then it got reprinted over on commondreams.org, basically saying, it's time to rebalance the court. Mitch McConnell has been packing the court for 6 years. He's been
packing the Supreme Court by
denying Merrick Garland a seat, but he's also been packing federal courts by denying President Obama over 100 seats in the last 2 years of his presidency. This has never been done before, to the best of my knowledge. This is Mitch McConnell, breaking all the traditions that we hold dear as a small D democracy and a small R republic. And I'm totally with you, Carl. We need to call it rebalancing. Michael in Bronx, New York. Hey, Michael, what's up?
Hi, Tom. How you doing? First of all, one of the earlier Catholic callers, just to reiterate that I'm Catholic, I'm a black man, and yes, the Catholic Church is divided on these particular issues, but if anyone really reads the Gospels, not once did Jesus ever mention anything about abortion. This whole thing with Roe v. Wade is not about abortion. It's about a woman's right to choose or what happens with her body, which includes...
It's about power.
A woman refuses... Yeah, but the thing is that the Roe v. Wade thing, if a woman refuses to be touched by anybody and says no, then it's no. That's what part of Roe v. Wade is. And I don't like the idea of these Republicans trying to make that a really big issue. I know it hasn't been brought up much in these opening statements, but the ACA certainly has been brought up a lot. And then if you're going to be calling yourself pro-life and you're going to overturn the ACA, that's a contradiction in itself. But let's not make any mistake also of what was brought up that the Democrats did so well, and that is why the rush of trying to get Barrett onto the Supreme Court? Because, you know, Trump himself had said that he's going to take the election to the Supreme Court if it doesn't rule in his favor, if it doesn't go his way. So we can go out and vote, and Biden wins by a super landslide. He will not accept it. He doesn't care about the people's vote. He doesn't care about the law or the Constitution. And this is going right into fascism and authoritarianism. We got to be
I'm with you, Michael.
Really
he is hoping for a Bush v. Gore replay, basically, that will keep him in the White House. I don't think it's going to happen, but, you know, there's no telling. I mean, we live in wild times right now. Michael, thank you for the call. We live in absolutely strange times. Oh, by the way, I wanted to give you a heads up on something that's going to be happening on this week. It's on the 15th. David Corton, the guy who wrote When Corporations Rule the World, New York Times bestseller, former professor of economics at Harvard, et cetera, et cetera. He and I, he's going to be kind of moderating a conversation with me about how monopolies threaten our political systems, our ecosystems, our economy, and the damage that they have done both to industries and individuals. All this based on my new book, The Hidden History of Monopolies, How Big Business Destroyed the American Dream. It's going to be at 3:30 Eastern Time, 12:30 Pacific Time on October 15th. And you can get all the information on our Facebook page or over at TomHartmann.com. So check that out. It should be absolutely fascinating. Dave in Federal Way, Washington. Hey, Dave, what's up?
Hey, not too much, Tom. I wanted to talk about something a little abstract. Look, as far as Amy Coney Barrett's religion, all right, no one's going to criticize that. But I will criticize any solicitor or anybody that comes out of the Federalist Society, because I believe the common denominator is they defer to executive power. And I heard another caller mention Elena Kagan. She's had a pattern of deferring to executive power. And why I think that's important, well, first off, the religious connection. All right, in the Old Testament, there was only three branches of government. There was the king, the Torah, or the word, and the priesthood. That's it. All right, and that makes that natural deference to executive power, I believe. And our adversaries are keenly aware of this, and I just want to give two recent examples. Number one was Kim Jong-un just did, the founding of the DPRK. He just had a parade where he had a new ICBM, the Hwasong 15, perhaps, on display. Now, just prior to that, he said that North Korea has met their war deterrent goals. Now, when North Korea talks about war deterrent goals, they're talking about deterrence against the United States. Another thing was Dmitry Kiselyov, a spokesman for the Russian state media. He said in perfect English, he said, it doesn't matter who the American president is, our grievance is with America. And he said, unless America declares war, that's the only additional thing they could do. He said, America won't do that because we know that Russia is the only country that can realistically turn America into radioactive ash. What he's saying there, and what all these dictators are doing, emulating one another, is what they're saying. Kiselyov was saying Russia has overmatched right now, right? So while they have overmatch, they're going to send weapons and technology out to their surrogates that give parity with America. Okay, now that's when we will go to war. Joe Biden, if he wins, I almost feel sad for him. But at the same time, I think if Donald Trump wins, our chances of survival are diminishing daily. I mean,
Let's be very clear, Dave. Everything that you just described with regard to Russian behavior and other autocratic regimes around the world has really one goal, and that's to make the world safe for kleptocrats, billionaires, oligarchs, and dictators. Whether they're like, you know, Xi in China calling themselves, something other than dictators, or whether they just, own up to it. Paul in Woodinville, Washington. Hey, Paul, what's on your mind?
Catholics on the court. I have a brand new discovery about Roe versus Wade, and that the Catholic position, or the right to life position, is fundamentally, constitutionally conflicted. And here's how I discovered this. The discussion of whether or not Amy Coney Barrett's Catholicism should be a question, well, I cross-referenced other Catholics on the court in cases, and particularly in Roe, and this is what I came up with. There was one Catholic on the court at the time that Roe versus Wade was decided. His name was Byron White, and he was appointed to the court by John F. Kennedy. Now, John F. Kennedy may not have said, or may have said, that he was not beholden to the Pope, but he appointed a staunch, devout Catholic to the court. And Byron White was one of the two dissenters in the 72 decision. The other was William Rehnquist. And Byron White, I don't know if he expressly invoked his Catholicism, but he was against abortion on religious grounds. And so I have to compare that to another case from 1927, which was known as Buck versus Bell, in which Oliver Wendell Holmes Jr. wrote maybe perhaps his lesser eloquent words in his decision that said, three generations of imbeciles is enough. In the case, this case, the state of Virginia wanted and did sterilize Carrie Buck because they thought that she was, in those days they called her an imbecile, she was developmentally disabled. And so was her mother, and it was presumed to be, and this was in the eugenics days, by the way, it was presumed to be a genetic condition. It was later found that she was not developmentally disabled, and the state of Virginia did sterilize her. But the court ruled an 8-1 decision that the state of Virginia had a compelling interest in not allowing people who were developmentally disabled to reproduce. And the 8-1, the dissent was one conservative, Pierce Butler, who expressly invoked his Catholicism and said that, no, he could not do this. So what the question is, does the state have a compelling interest in your medical privacy? So whereas if you hold both Catholics to have their right to life, they stand on different sides of the state's right. So by Pierce Butler, his dissent would say, no, the state of Virginia does not have a compelling interest in sterilizing Carrie Buck. But Byron White said the state has does have a compelling interest in your privacy when it comes to a woman having an abortion. Well, it's the same power. The state has the same, either has the power or it doesn't. So the state, it's the same power that would give the state the power to force you to be sterilized as to prevent you from having an abortion. It's the same damn power. It cuts both ways. It's just like the power that Gretchen Whitmer in Michigan has to force people to wear masks and stay at home is the same power that Brian Kemp has in Georgia to tell the city of Atlanta that they may not have a mandatory mask rule. The power cuts both ways. So the Catholic position, the right to life position, may be the church's position, but it is constitutionally conflicted, and that's why in the Roe versus Wade hearings, Potter Stewart asked the Wade team, what kind of question is the abortion question? Is it philosophical? Is it constitutional? Is it religious? Is it ethical? Is it moral? What kind of question is it? And the Wade team responded, it's all of the above. And that's where they lost the case, because the court can only rule in constitutional terms.
Right. Or based on the law. I mean, you know, they're the final court of appeals. But yes, point made, Paul. Thank you. And this is an awesome power. The court took on this power to itself in 1803, and it has wielded it vigorously and enthusiastically since the second half of the 20th century in large part. I mean, they did it before that. Quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR, all into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required. It's accessible from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. You improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/Hartman with two N's. netsuite.com/Hartman. That's netsuite.com/Hartman. They're back to the hearings, and Sheldon Whitehouse is speaking right now. So let's pick up the hearings.
Senator Cruz said, you don't do this in an election year. That's long gone. And our chairman made his famous hold the tape promise. If an opening comes in the last year of President Trump's term, we'll wait till the next election. That's gone too.
Sheldon Whitehouse is pointing out the hypocrisy, the various bizarre stories that we've been told. He says this is a political parlor game. There are actually high stakes here, and he's going to tell three of them.
Obergefell and the Obamacare cases. Here's the GOP platform, the Republican platform, the platform of my colleagues on the other side of this aisle say that a Republican president will appoint judges who will reverse Roe, Obergefell, and the Obamacare cases. So if you have a family member with an interest in some autonomy over their body under Roe versus Wade, the ability to have a marriage, have friends marry, have a niece or a daughter or a son marry someone of their same sex, you've got a stake. And if you're one of the millions and millions of Americans who depend on the Affordable Care Act, you've got a stake. It's not just the platform over and over again. Let's start by talking about the Affordable Care Act. Here's the president talking about this litigation that we're gearing up this nominee for November 10th. In this litigation, he said, we want to terminate health care under Obamacare. That is the president's statement. So when we react to that, don't act as if we're making this stuff up. This is what President Trump said. This is what your party platform says. Reverse the Obamacare cases. Senator after senator, including many in this committee, filed briefs saying that the Affordable Care Act should be thrown out by courts. Why is it surprising for us to be concerned that you want this nominee to do what you want nominees to do? One quick stop on NFIB v. Sebelius, because a lot of this has to do with money. This is an interesting comparison. National Federation of Independent Businesses, until it filed the NFIB versus Sebelius case, had its biggest donation ever of $21,000. In the year that it went to work on the Affordable Care Act, 10 wealthy donors gave $10 million. Somebody deserves a thank you. So let's go on to Roe v. Wade. Same thing. The president has said that reversing Roe v. Wade will happen automatically because he's putting pro-life justices on the court. Why would we not take him at his word? The Republican Party platform says it will reverse Roe. Why would we not comment on that and take you at your word? Senators here, including Senator Hawley, have said, I will vote only for nominees who acknowledge that Roe v. Wade is wrongly decided. And they're pledged to vote for this nominee. Do the math. That's a really simple equation to run. The Republican brief in June Medical said Roe should be overruled. So don't act surprised when we ask questions about whether that's what you're up to here. And finally, out in the ad world that you have spared yourself wisely, Judge Barrett, the Susan B. Anthony Foundation is running advertisements right now saying that you are set. You are set to give our pro-life country the court that it deserves. There's the ad with the voiceover. She's set. And then Roe, Obamacare cases, and Obergefell, gay marriage. National Organization for Marriage, the big group that opposes same-sex marriage, says in this proceeding, all our issues are at stake. Republican platform says it wants to reverse Obergefell. And the Republican brief filed in the case said same-sex relationships don't fall within any constitutional protection. So when we say the stakes are high on this, it's because you've said the stakes are high on this. You have said that's what you want to do. So how are people going about doing it? What is the scheme here? Let me start with this one. In all cases, there's big anonymous money behind various lanes of activity. One lane of activity is through the conduit of the Federalist Society. It's managed by a guy, was managed by a guy named Leonard Leo, and it's taken over the selection of judicial nominees. How do we know that to be the case? Because Trump has said so over and over again. His White House counsel said so. So we have an anonymously funded group controlling judicial selection run by this guy, Leonard Leo. Then in another lane, we have, again, anonymous funders running through something called the Judicial Crisis Network, which is run by Carrie Severino, and it's doing PR and campaign ads for Republican judicial nominees. It got $17 million donation in the Garland Gorsuch contest. It got another single $17 million donation to support Kavanaugh. Somebody, perhaps the same person, spent $35 million to influence the makeup of the United States Supreme Court. Tell me that's good. And then over here, you have a whole array of legal groups, also funded by dark money, which have a different role. They bring cases to the court. They don't wind their way to the court, Your Honor. They get shoved to the court.
Sheldon Whitehouse is absolutely
groups,
brilliant. Rather than questioning Barrett and giving her a chance, he's just laying out his case.
Now, I've had a chance to have a look at this, and I was in a case, actually, as an amicus myself, the Consumer Financial Protection Board case. And in that case, there were 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 amicus briefs filed, and every single one of them was a group funded by something called Donors Trust. Donors Trust is a gigantic identity scrubbing device for the right wing so that it says Donors Trust is the donor without whoever the real donor is. It doesn't have a business. It doesn't have a business plan. It doesn't do anything. It's just an identity scrubber. And this group here, the Bradley Foundation, funded 8 out of the 11 briefs. That seems weird to me when you have amicus briefs coming in little flotillas that are funded by the same groups but nominally separate in the court. So I actually attached this to my brief as an appendix. Center for Media and Democracy saw it, and they did better work. They went on to say which foundations funded the brief writers in that CFPB case. Here's the Bradley Foundation for $5.6 million to those groups. Here's Donors Trust, $23 million to those brief writing groups. The grand total across all the donor groups was $68 million to the groups that were filing amicus briefs, pretending that they were different groups. And it's not just in the Consumer Financial Protection Board case. You might say, well, that was just a one-off. Here's Janus, the anti-labor case. It had a long trail through the court, through Friedrichs and through Knox and through other decisions. And SourceWatch and ProPublica did some work about this. Here's Donors Trust and Donors Capital Fund. And here's the Bradley Foundation. And they totaled giving $45 million to the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15 groups that filed amicus briefs pretending to be different groups. And both of the lawyer groups in the case, funded by Donors Trust, funded by Bradley Foundation and Janus. This is happening over and over and over again, and it goes beyond just the briefs. It goes beyond just the amicus presentations. The Federalist Society, remember this group that is acting as the conduit and that Donald Trump has said is doing his judicial selection? They're getting money from the same foundations. From Donors Trust, $16.7 million. From the Bradley Foundation, $1.37 million. From the same group of foundations total, $33 million. So you can start to look at these and you can start to tie them together. The legal groups, all the same funders over and over again, bringing the cases and providing this orchestrated chorus of amici. Then the same group also funds the Federalist Society over here. The Washington Post wrote a big expose about this, and that made Leonard Leo a little hot, a little bit like a burned agent. So he had to jump out, and he went off to go and do anonymously funded voter suppression work. Guess who jumped in to take over the selection process in this case? For Judge Barrett. Harry Severino made the hop. So once again, ties right in together. So Center for Media and Democracy has done a little bit more research. Here's a Bradley Foundation memo that they've published. The Bradley Foundation is reviewing a grant application asking for money for this orchestrated amicus process. And what do they say in the staff recommendation? It is important to orchestrate, their word, not mine, important to orchestrate high caliber amicus efforts before the court. They also note that Bradley has done previous philanthropic investments in the actual underlying legal actions. So Bradley is funding, what do they call, philanthropically investing in the underlying legal action and then giving money to groups to show up in the orchestrated chorus of amici. That can't be good. And it goes on, because they also found this email. This email comes from an individual at the Bradley Foundation, and it asks our friend Leonard Leo, who used to run the selection process, is there a 501c3 nonprofit to which Bradley could direct any support of the two Supreme Court amicus projects other than Donors Trust? I don't know why they wanted to avoid the reliable identity scrubber Donors Trust, but for some reason they did. So Leonard Leo writes back, on Federalist Society address. So don't tell me that it isn't Federalist Society business. On Federalist Society, on his address, he writes back, yes, send it to the Judicial Education Project, which could take and allocate the money. And guess who works for the Judicial Education Project? Harry Severino, who also helped select this nominee running the Trump Federalist Society selection process. So the connections abound. In the Washington Post article, they point out that the Judicial Crisis Network's office is on the same hallway in the same building as the Federalist Society, and that when they sent their reporter to talk to somebody at the Judicial Crisis Network, somebody from the Federalist Society came down to let them up. This more and more looks like it's not three schemes, but it's one scheme with the same funders selecting judges, funding campaigns for the judges, and then showing up in court in these orchestrated amicus flotillas to tell the judges what to do. On the Judicial Crisis Network, you've got the Leonard Leo connection, obviously. She hopped in to take over for him with the Federalist Society. You've got the campaigns that I've talked about, where they take $17 million contributions. That's a big check to write, $17 million, to campaign for Supreme Court nominees. No idea who that is or what they got for it. You've got briefs that she wrote. The Republican senators filed briefs in that NFIB case signed by Ms. Severino. The woman who helped choose this nominee has written briefs for Republican senators attacking the ACA. Don't say the ACA is not an issue here. And by the way, the Judicial Crisis Network funds the Republican Attorneys General. It funds RAGA, the Republican Attorney General's Association, and it funds individual Republican Attorneys General. And guess who the plaintiffs are in the Affordable Care Act case? Republican Attorneys General. Trump joined them because he didn't want to defend, so he's in with the Republican Attorneys General. But here's the Judicial Crisis Network campaigning for Supreme Court nominees, writing briefs for senators against the Affordable Care Act, supporting the Republicans who are bringing this case. And
Senator Sheldon Whitehouse is testifying, or is theoretically questioning Amy Barrett, but actually giving us a lesson in how she's funded and the whole group. Here it is.
I've never seen this around any court that I've ever been involved with, where there's this much dark money and this much influence being used. Here's how the Washington Post summed it up. This is a conservative activist behind-the-scenes campaign to remake the nation's courts, and it's a $250 million dark money operation. $250 million is a lot of money to spend if you're not getting anything for it. So that raises the question, what are they getting for it? Well, I showed the slide earlier on the Affordable Care Act and on Obergefell and on Roe versus Wade. That's where they lost. But with another judge, that could change. That's where the contest is. That's where the Republican Party platform tells us to look at how they want judges to rule, to reverse Roe, to reverse the Obamacare cases, and to reverse Obergefell and take away gay marriage. That is their stated objective and plan. Why not take them at their word? But there's another piece of it, and that is not what's ahead of us, but what's behind us. What's behind us is now 80 cases, Mr. Chairman, 80 cases under Chief Justice Roberts that have these characteristics. One, they were decided 5-4 by a bare majority. Two, the 5-4 majority was partisan in the sense that not one Democratic appointee joined the five. I refer to that group as the Roberts Five. It changes a little bit, as with Justice Scalia's death, for instance. But there's been a steady Roberts Five that has delivered now 80 of these decisions. And the last characteristic of them is that there is an identifiable Republican donor interest in those cases. And in every single case, that donor interest won. It was an 80-0, 5-4 partisan rout. Ransacking. And it's important to look at where those cases went, because they're not about big public issues like getting rid of the Affordable Care Act, undoing Roe versus Wade, and undoing same-sex marriage. They're about power. And if you look at those 80 decisions, they fall into four categories over and over and over again. One, unlimited and dark money in politics. Citizens United is the famous one, but it's continued since with McCutcheon, and we've got one coming up now. Always the 5-4, unlimited money in politics, never protecting against dark money in politics, despite the fact that they said it was going to be transparent. And who wins when you allow unlimited dark money in politics? A very small group. The ones who have unlimited money to spend and a motive to spend it in politics. They win, everybody else loses. And if you're looking at who might be behind this, let's talk about people with unlimited money to spend and a motive to do it. We'll see how that goes. Next, knock the civil jury down. Whittle it down to a nub. The civil jury was in the Constitution, in the Bill of Rights, in our darn Declaration of Independence. But it's annoying to big corporate powers, because you can swagger your way as a big corporate power through Congress. You can go and tell the president you put money into to elect what to do. He'll put your stooges at the EPA. It's all great until you get to the civil jury, because they have an obligation as you know, Judge Barrett, they have an obligation under the law to be fair to both parties, irrespective of their size. You can't bribe them. You're not allowed to. It's a crime to tamper with a jury. It's standard practice to tamper with Congress. And they make decisions based on the law. If you're used to being the boss and swaggering your way around the political side, you don't want to be answerable before a jury. And so one after another, these 85-4 decisions have knocked down, whittled away at the civil jury, a great American institution. Third, first was unlimited dark money. Second was demean and diminish the civil jury. Third is weaken regulatory agencies. A lot of this money, I'm convinced, is polluter money. The Koch Industries is a polluter. The fossil fuel industry is a polluter. Who else would be putting buckets of money into this and wanting to hide who they are behind donors trust or other schemes? And what if you're a big polluter, what do you want? You want weak regulatory agencies. You want ones that you can box up and run over to Congress and get your friends to fix things for you in Congress. Over and over and over again, these decisions are targeted at regulatory agencies to weaken their independence and weaken their strength. And if you're a big polluter, a weak regulatory agency is your idea of a good day. And the last thing is in politics, in voting. Why on earth the court made the decision, a factual decision, not something appellate courts are ordinarily supposed to make, as I understand it, Judge Barrett, the factual decision that nobody needed to worry about minority voters in preclearance states being discriminated against or that legislators would try to knock back their ability to vote. These five made that finding in Shelby County against bipartisan legislation from both houses of Congress, hugely passed on no factual record. They just decided that that was a problem that was over. On no record, with no basis, because it got them to the result that we then saw. What followed? State after state after state passed voter suppression laws. One so badly targeting African Americans that the two courts said it was surgically tailored to get after minority voters. And gerrymandering, the other great control. Bulk gerrymandering, where you go into a state, like the Red Map Project did in Ohio and Pennsylvania, and you pack Democrats so tightly into a few districts that all the others become Republican majority districts. And in those states, you send a delegation to Congress that has a huge majority of Republican members, like 13-5, as I recall, in a state where the five, the party of the five, actually won the popular vote. You've sent a delegation to Congress that is out of step with the popular vote of that state, and court after court figured out how to solve that, and the Supreme Court said, nope, 5-4 again, nope, we're not going to take an interest in that question. In all these areas where it's about political power for big special interests and people who want to fund campaigns and people who want to get their way through politics without actually showing up, doing it behind donors' trust and other groups, doing it through these schemes, over and over and over again, you see the same thing. 80 decisions, Judge Barrett. 80 decisions, an 80-0 sweep. I don't think you've tried cases, but some cases, the issue is bias and discrimination. And if you're making a bias case, as a trial lawyer, Lindsey Graham is a hell of a good trial lawyer. If he wanted to make a bias case, Dick Durbin's a hell of a good trial lawyer. If they wanted to make a bias case and they could show an 80-0 pattern, A, that's admissible, and B, I'd love to make that argument to the jury. I'd be really hard-pressed to be the lawyer saying, no, 80-0 is just a bunch of flukes. All 5-4, all partisan, all this way. So something is not right around the court. And dark money has a lot to do with it. Special interests have a lot to do with it.
Spot on. Donors. Sheldon Whitehouse, Democrat of Rhode Island.
been listening to Tom Hartmann. For audio and video archives, visit TomHartmann.com.